look, we're running for the presidency of the United States of America, not student council president.
Oh, really? That was Barack Obama, candidate for president, speaking to Tim Russert on NBC's Meet the Press, not from D.C., but from Iowa, where everybody and their uncle camped out this weekend. Everybody who wants to be POTUS. It was a big political dinner, and to tell us who got served is Politico's Jim Vandehei. Hi, Jim.
How are you doing? I almost missed the call because I was getting teary-eyed. I was listening to Celine Dion while I was doing some ab work, so I'm glad I can make it.
Training for the Sears Tower marathon next year?
Just for when the next ship goes down, you know?
You never know. Got to be prepared. So this big dinner over the weekend, the Jefferson-Jackson dinner, named for Thomas Jefferson and Andrew Jackson. Somebody on your website said it was just a deadly dull event, but it obviously has some bigger purpose than boring us all to death. What is the point of the Jefferson-Jackson dinner?
Well, the last couple of elections, it gave us a pretty good indication of who might have a late surge. It's where John Kerry really, I think, started to hit his groove in 04 and then went on to win Iowa. This one, I don't know. We keep thinking there's going to be this big change of strategy among the candidates, and it never really happens. I mean, you read the news coverage or listen to it on cable TV, and you'd think, wow, these guys really, you know, they've got the knives out and they're being tougher on each other. In fact, I don't think they're being very tough at all. I mean, with the exception of Edwards, you know, Obama's very, very reluctant to draw sharp distinctions with Hillary Clinton or to go on the attack. So, I mean, some of the interesting takeaway notes from the dinner were that, you know, clearly Barack Obama had a ton of people in the audience. They were young people mostly. Howard Dean did this last time around. The big question for Barack Obama is, can he actually get those young people to vote? I mean, it was very misleading last time around because Howard Dean had so many people showing up at events and everyone thought he had all this enthusiasm and momentum. And it turned out, you know, 18-year-olds, you know, who even work on campaigns are just as lazy as 18-year-olds. They don't show up to vote.
Right. Well, the next morning, Senator Obama appeared on Meet the Press. Russert pressed him actually on a lot of issues. I talked about the distinctions between him and Hillary Clinton, why he takes money from state lobbyists, and the appearance at events of a religious singer who says he was, quote, cured of being gay. Let's listen to this exchange between Russert and Obama.
You had a group of supporters on a Bible tour in South Carolina headed by a singer called Donnie McClurkin, mm-hmm. who said that homosexuality was a curse and that he had been cured by prayer. Do you believe homosexuality is a curse?
No.
Do you believe that it is something that you are born gay and that, or that you can change your behavior?
I do not believe being gay or lesbian is a choice. And so I disagree with Reverend McClurkin.
So why have Reverend McClurkin out there stumping for you?
Well, what Barack Obama went on to say was that you have to reach out to evangelical Christians, whether you agree with them or not. And to a point, he has a good point. I mean, listen, there's a big group of evangelical Christians who are against abortion, and they consider it their number one issue. Democrats are never, ever, ever going to win those Christian votes. However, there's also a big block of evangelical Christians who care a lot about abortion, but also care about poverty, global warming, and a lot of other issues. And that's where there's a lot of Democrats who are starting to think, is there a way that we can connect with these voters, especially when we emphasize values issues and show that we're committed to the poor, that we're committed to the hungry, and committed to all the principles that are outlined in the Bible. And Barack Obama's trying to say, I can bring people together. The problem with the bring people together message is angry Democrats don't want to bring people together, nor do angry Republicans. They want their candidate to beat the pulp out of the other candidate on the other side of the aisle. That's how politics works. So it's just not a message that resonates with primary voters who tend to be very hyperpartisan.
We're talking to Jim Vandehei of Politico.com. Let's talk about the Republicans. This is a little bit in the weeds, but I'm hoping you can help me understand this. Last week, GOP voted about 121-9 to sort of smack down states that are trying to race to be the first in the primary season. You have New Hampshire, Florida, South Carolina, Michigan, and Wyoming are going to all lose a whole bunch of their delegate seats at the Republican National Convention next summer because they're messing around with the primary calendar. Is there going to be any fallout from this? Is this posturing? What is this?
I mean, there's a couple potential fallouts. It's mostly posturing. You've got the National Party on both sides that's trying to exert muscle over the process. They like to set up the flow and the calendar of these primaries and these caucuses. And you've got states who are saying, you know what, I'm tired of this goofy system where it's always Iowa, always New Hampshire, then South Carolina. Like, we want to be first, and we want to be relevant in this process, because by the time most states vote, nobody cares. We already know who the nominee is going to be. Now, the party can withhold delegates, and that's all well and good, but unless it's actually a competitive race going into the convention, which just has not happened in recent history, it doesn't matter because we already know it's a foregone conclusion who's actually going to win. So the delegates are basically committed already, and if you lost them, it's not going to affect the outcome.
I want to ask you about a story that your website did last week, which we just all thought was both hilarious, ridiculous, and just a little bit sad, that apparently there are cliques in the House of Representatives, seating cliques, that, you know, the House doesn't have assigned seating like the Senate, so the representatives, they can kind of choose with whom they're going to sit and why they're going to sit with them. And please tell me that this is much more than what happened to me in 1982 in Glenridge, New Jersey, Glenridge High School.
Unfortunately for you, it's not that different. I covered the House for a long time, especially in the late 90s and early part of 2000. And it really, it's remarkable how much it is like high school, where literally when they go to the House floor, the same group of people congregate in the same sections. They often won't talk to other people. You know, you have the cool cliques, and you have the Texas clique, and you have the Murtha clique, that the John Murtha clique that will sit in the exact same place and try to wield power. It really, I mean, it all Congress itself always has that campus feel, because it's you're basically everyone stays in the same building and they all work in the same buildings right off of Congress. They hang out together and very rarely when they're in Washington get exposed to anybody other than themselves.
So. My favorite version of that was when I was covering Congress and William Jefferson, the guy from Louisiana, was getting in all this trouble for suspicion he accepted money he wasn't supposed to take. And the day this was all breaking, Ehud Olmert was addressing Congress. And Bill Jefferson shows up late. And everyone has these headphones on so that they could, the stuff can be translated. And no one will give Bill Jefferson headphones. There aren't any headphones left. And they're like interns. They're like pages wearing them. And he can't get headphones. And he's walking around and there's nowhere for him to sit. And he was like the guy who, you know, got kicked off the football team who was not cool anymore in the lunchroom. It was amazing to watch.
So he reached into a freezer and grabbed $90,000
right.
US bills and bought one.
Right. So does it break down by your region? Does it break down by your politics? Or is this just about who actually really likes whom?
Well, number one, you always have the Republicans on one side, Democrats on the other. And then inside of those, it could be everything from ethnicity. You know, a lot of the members of the Congressional Black Caucus sit together. It can be delegation. A lot of the members of the Texas delegation sit together. It can be by committee, the appropriators, the people who dole out the money. You know, they're kind of the cool kids because they got cash. They sit together. So it breaks down a bunch of different ways, but it's a very predictable way.
Before I let you go, do we have another debate up this week?
I think we have like 55 this year. We've got another Democratic and Republican debate coming up, and they're very exciting. I think they're captivating for all of us. It's pretty bad when political reporters don't even really watch all the debates anymore because you just don't have time to fit them into your schedule.
I'm wondering, though, if this one might actually be – this one is in, I think, Vegas, right?
Mm-hmm.
If it might actually be interesting, because during the last debate, that actually had – there were a couple fireworks, we got to admit.
They did, and I mean, I guess these debates always get – and I sort of joke, but I actually think these debates are important.
I joke.
Big issues that people should be talking about. And I wish that some of these debates would be a tad more, a lot more substantive. The closer you get to those caucuses and those primaries, and the more nervous candidates get, there tends to be more of this attacking. And it's not just attacking for sport. I think it helps draw clear distinctions. I think we're starting to get a bigger portrait and clearer portrait of what is the clear differences between Obama and Clinton, or Clinton and Edwards. And I think that helps clarify things for voters. And that's a good process. You got to remember, though, still you're lucky to get 2 million people to tune into these debates. So most people are at home listening to Celine Dion.
Ah. Yeah.
Well, then don't forget the writer strike's on, so it may help out things a little bit. So we'll watch it so other people don't. We'll let you know what happens. That will be me and Jim Vandehei and some other person in Iowa watching the debates. Hey, Jim Vandehei from Politico.com. Nice to see you.
Enjoy the week.